Well, yeah.
I know what it is. People are crying.
You know what that fuego.
Yeah.
You know what that fuego. 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 Nobody really want fuego. Nobody really want fuego. Brother, what that super
nigga. Nobody really want fuego. Messiah will bring fire down worse than Waco. Buy you some coffee, your Lego, your Eggos, your sandwich with mayo and two slices of mato. Sitting at home on the couch playing Halo, but the Messiah ain't playing no Wiggles. Games, women and pants gonna get it. Flames, brothers keeping no commandments. Same, calling our armies a favor. Even with your NATO and soldiers with Dracos. Just tell me, how can you stop a tornado or better yet the lava from the volcano? They really can't, bro. They have to pay, bro. The most I say so. So in chase they go for all their wicked atrocities they owe. For all their wicked atrocities they owe. From San Diego to Trinidad Tobago, I'm spitting these words so all Israelites they know. Keeping commandments the only way we grow so we can defeat the nation Galileo. Nation Galileo, get it? Cause they pale. He's bringing them hell for every bill of sale. So family, just examine yourself when that fuego come. You don't want to get left. Forsake your sins so you complete the test. Then you can have complete rest from all your stress. Fight to do right to your very last breath. Or stay wicked and receive second death. Destruction of enemies is muy bueno. Make sure that's one of the things that you pray for. Into the kingdom, the sinners, they can't go. The sinners can't go. So we say, hasta luego, hasta luego.
Brothers really don't want fuego.
Sisters really don't want fuego.
Nobody really want fuego. From the one that's super negro.
Turn it.
Fuegos really don't want fuego.
Turn it.
Fuegos really don't want fuego.
Turn it.
Nobody really want fuego.
Hey,
from the one that's super negro.
Fuego.
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 Brother, you don't want that fuego.
Hey.
You don't want that fuego.
Victory. Flawless victory. Shabbat shalom. Welcome to the Native. Oh, wait a second. We changed the name. Welcome to the Power Hour, the Lost 144K, dealing with different news events and lost history of you so-called Native Latin blacks and Hispanics.
Bring it out.
Yeah, because we got to cover like all the monikers that they give us, right?
Right.
The list would be too long because I could say Afro-American, whatever.
The Lord did tell us that we'd be a proverb and a byword, so you're right.
It's like the movie Mule. That's the story about it. He pulls over to help a Judah family because they got a flat tire. He says, I like helping Negroes. So they look at him and he goes, Negro? He goes, I'm black. I'm like, wow.
Hey, the directors knew what they were doing when they put that in there.
Yeah, they did.
They knew what they were doing
Hollywood
when they put that in
the truth.
Yeah, that's,
and then
that's,
he said, okay.
Yeah. Because it's all the same. It's all the same.
It's an evidence.
Well, right.
I mean, Clint Eastwood ate them.
Right, right. What they will disagree with is if you say, no, I'm an Israelite from the tribe of Judah. I'm an Israelite from the tribe of Judah.
No.
You can be African American.
I'm Jewish too.
Oh, you want to be Hispanic? You want to be Latino? That's fine. Hey, that's like when we were on the quest. When we were, was it Costa Maya or the other one? No, it was the other stop in Mexico where the Edomite couple that's from Phoenix came up to us.
Oh, yes. Sure. We're having
the
coconut.
Because they saw the menorahs and stuff. And I go, yeah, because we're Jewish too. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you are Jewish.
You speak wisely.
Yeah. I pick that up a lot from Isaac. Like, he'll tell them directas, and they don't even realize that he's, like, smacking them.
Bro, he's the best at that.
Well, it's hilarious, too, because he's smirking, and he's just, like, real low-key. Yeah. Anyway, I'm Captain Yashua. We have
Captain Apari. Shabbat shalom.
Shalom, most high in Christ. Bless Captain Amariah.
Shalom, soldier liaison.
Soldier liaison. Okay, I was gonna say point that down a little bit. You know what? And I just noticed like my chair is lower.
Yeah, mine is lower too.
Aerodynamics is all off. There you go.
Must be Issachar sitting here lower.
Anyway, I'm gonna go ahead and post links. But before I do that, because I forgot to post links last week, because we jumped right in. So we're gonna review a couple articles this week. There's one I've been wanting to go over. It's real short, so I think we should be able to get through two topics today. One is I have an article about the sons of slaveholders and their wealth, and says the sons of slaveholders quickly recovered their father's wealth. So you know, because there's and this is a real study that the economists did behind, because there's been a lot of things where there is maybe not people aren't aware of it, but there's a train of thought out there that the wealthy people today it's impossible for them to have remained wealthy after the slave trade, because after abolition, they lost everything.
No.
So this just touches on the surface of it, but there's actually been a study now that shows that they couldn't be farther from the truth. And this whole pool of like bootstraps thing is invalidated based on hard data by their science that they like to go by.
Hard data.
Because it shows like contrary-wise that it makes a statement at one point where it says most economists will tell you that wealth begets wealth. So there is no choice. If you were not born wealthy, you cannot be wealthy. So, and it's not 100% right. You have people like Bill Gates. Those are different types of things that you can manage at age of a technical thing, technology was shifting, but they won't say the right direction.
There we go.
Genesis chapter 27 and verse 38. And Esau said unto
his father. Hast thou but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept.
So just for, we may have some new people on the air. Okay, so this is what happened. Was long story short. Okay. Most I set it up this way. Jacob, his younger brother, who was our forefather, okay, got the blessing. All right, read it. It's Genesis. Read it. For time's sake, I'm not going to get into it. So now the older brother, Esau, who was supposed to get the birthright, is upset. Okay, now he gave up his birthright years earlier.
That's right.
Okay, but just like Esau is, the so-called Caucasian man, okay, they'll give and they'll break the covenants and they want it back.
That's right.
That's what they did with our Native American brothers and sisters. So 500 covenants were made and broken. Okay, they don't keep their word. And there's scriptures that talk about that too. But just want to kind of get you briefly up to speed for anybody that's new and don't know the scriptures. Go ahead.
And Isaac his father answered and said unto him, Behold, thy dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth.
The dwelling that thy dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth, meaning they will live everywhere. You go to a neighborhood that you don't have an Edomite living there.
Nope.
Okay, even in Harlem, okay, where I work, we already knew. Whenever we saw an Edomite coming to the neighborhood, we already knew gentrification was coming in.
Yep.
Trust me, they mingle among you. They're sneaky. They're very, I'm telling you, man. Go ahead.
And of the dew of heaven from above.
And the dew of heaven from above. So the fatness meant that they were going to live in the best places, and the dew of heaven just means they were going to live everywhere.
That's right.
Okay, go ahead.
And by thy sword shall thy live.
By thy what?
By thy sword shall thy live.
So you ever wonder why we always in war? Why America is always in war and some type of conflict? You go to usembassy.gov, you'll see that we have embassies everywhere in the world.
Yep.
You find that in Revelation also. So it says that by thy sword we shall live. Everything that Esau has gotten has been by force, by war, okay, by taking it. All right, the Greeks that you see up there in up where they're at in Russia and stuff like that, they were actually Japhet,
mm-hmm.
dark people. Okay, Alexander the Greek went in there and conquered all those lands, and that's where they came in, an Edomite. Okay, go ahead.
And shalt serve thy brother, and it shall come to pass when thou shall have the dominion that thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck.
All right, so basically, they're going to live everywhere and in the best places.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they shall have the dominion. All right, so one other thing, one other scripture I want to go to. Let's go to Isaiah 14 and 21, because he also brought up that the article is speaking about how their grandchildren,
the sons, just talking about the sons of the slave owners.
All right, the sons of the slave owners, right? That now it's coming out that, yes, they have inherited. They did. Okay. And which meant they condone all that stuff.
That's right.
Right. Okay. Well, a lot of people have issue when we bring this scripture out. But there's a reason why the Most High put this in the Bible.
Mm.
Guess what? They knew that it was wrong to have slaves, but they capitalized off our backs. Okay. And because of that, because the Most High God is a merciful God, long suffering. Right. And vengeance is his, like the scripture says. Mm-hmm. Right. They're going to pay, too.
That's right.
And here's the proof. Go ahead, brother.
The book of Isaiah, chapter 14, verse 21. Prepare slaughter for their children.
Read it right. Read it right.
Oh, sorry. Prepare slaughter for his children.
For who's the his there? Esau. For, okay. Go ahead.
For the iniquities of their fathers.
For the iniquity of their father. So some of you, because we like to, we hear this a lot, right? Well, I didn't own any slaves.
Right.
Yeah. That was my great-great-grandfather's. Read it from the top again. Let's see if the Most High cares about that.
Prepare slaughter for his children.
Mm-hmm.
For the iniquities of their fathers.
For the iniquities of their fathers. And guess what? They're still holding on to that money. They're living lavishly off of that. Guess what? They're just as guilty. Okay. In the world, as a crime, okay, you may not even know the stuff is stolen,
mm-hmm.
but guess what? There's a charge, at least in New York, I don't know about it here, criminal possession of stolen property.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You're still guilty.
Yeah, just yesterday, I mean, you guys are both in the spirit bringing out this article and then this scripture. Just yesterday, I was having a conversation with somebody, and this topic came up about, I'm like, bro, listen, you understand that God's a just God, and if he's just, then you understand that there has to be consequences for what they did to his people. Have they paid for what they've done? I said, if anything, they're still reaping the benefits. They're still rich off of it today.
Sure.
Then he's like, well, I mean, we don't know about that. So now this article that you're going to bring out is perfect.
In fact, the fake Jews over there in our land,
mm-hmm.
right,
mm-hmm.
they flipped they foot the bill for the slave trade. Okay, they were the ones.
Yeah, they financed.
They financed the slave trade. They were the ones that financed the ships.
How about that for some pride and pomp? To be like, listen, I'm gonna ship you off to slavery, and I'm gonna take on your heritage.
Something, huh?
Yeah. Go ahead, finish it.
So give it back to the cap.
That they do not rise, nor possess the land, nor fill the face of the world with cities.
All right. So long story short. Okay. Matter of fact, let's read 20. Let's read down to 23. I'm sorry.
For I will rise up against them.
What's the Most High gonna do?
For I will rise up against them.
Go ahead.
Saith the Lord of hosts.
Uh-huh.
And cut off from Babylon the name and remnant of... I'm sorry.
But
remnant.
You got to read this right, because this scripture, this verse right here, bro, is going with what the article is. Let's go. Start from the top.
For I will rise up against them, saith the Lord of hosts, and cut off from Babylon the name and remnant and son and nephew, saith the Lord.
And son and nephew. The cap's going to go into that article right now.
Right, because when it's not just sons, even though the title sons, you're going to see how what their mechanism was to retain their wealth.
Okay, 23, and then I'll give it back to Cap. Hey.
I will also make it a possession for the bitterns and pools of water, and I will sweep it with a bosom.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Of destruction, saith the Lord of hosts.
So he got nice plans for them. All right, so they could enjoy all their forefathers' wealth they want now. But the time is high time. The time is going to come.
That's what I got to tell myself. Each time that I see these heathen with their wealth and everything like that, I just got to remember, you know, like we got next. Like they're supposed to have these things. This is their blessing. This is their kingdom.
They still get you angry.
Oh, right? Hell yeah.
But
it also
puts a smile on your face, because if you know the scriptures and you're in the right spirit,
right.
You know
right.
that your time, Lord willing, He has mercy on us, and it will come, and we'll get to see it.
Hey, that's the good news. That's the gospel. That's what my class for today is going to be about. It's about the
gospel.
About the gospel.
It's called the good news?
It's called the gospel.
You going to tag somebody in it?
I don't know.
Fuego?
I don't know. I leave that type of stuff up to you, bro. I just come. I do what I do. And, I don't know if it'll be Fuego. We'll see how the spirit rolls. But
No, it's going to be Fuego.
Yeah. No. Well, I know, I mean... He particularly likes those type of topics. You see, he gets some lively and stuff like that. So I think it should be interesting with the commentary today.
As an old lion, who shall rouse him up?
Yeah. That stuff rouses him up.
Justice.
That stuff rouses the old man up. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, so it says, after abolition, the sons of slaveholders quickly recovered their father's wealth. A new paper quantifies how quickly Southern planter elites recovered from the Civil War. Socialism never took hold in America, John Steinbeck allegedly quipped, because the poor saw themselves not as an exploited proletariat, but as temporarily embarrassed millionaires. So, right, this is not a common word, so we are going to look up the definition of proletariat so that we can explain that, right?
Is that John Steinbeck from Mice and Men?
Yes. Oh. Yes, that John Steinbeck. Proletariat is workers or working class people regarded collectively. So often used with reference to Marxism, mm-hmm. Which is socialism. Well, he's the father of it is what they say, or rather as far as documenting it. Anyway, so really the proletariat is us, right? Because we're that working middle class and everything. And he says socialism never took hold. He says because the poor saw themselves not as an exploited proletariat, but as temporarily embarrassed millionaires. So speaking about these slaveholding elite, right? Like it wasn't like, oh my gosh, we're going to have to go to work now. And, you know, we're going to have to take these jobs that, you know, the slaves were doing and we're going to do it. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that it would take, you know, an economic study to really validate this when you had the black codes and Jim Crow and all of that, that showed you how it was, you know what I'm saying? So yeah. Okay. Sharecropping is the biggest example of that. They still wound up owning all that stuff. So what did they do? Sharecropping. The difference is with us is that we don't own anything. It's like when we were going over the Negro with the excerpt from Malcolm X's book, and he said the difference between us and the white man is that if the white man is driving the Cadillac, he first has a Cadillac house and a Cadillac bank account.
Right.
He goes, if we drive the Cadillac, we're barely able to pay rent and we're in debt, right?
Yep.
It's the same type of mindset here when it comes to these slaveholders. what was abolished was the ability to get free labor,
right.
$0 labor. They did not lose their lands. They did not lose all this. Because guess what? Now you had a workforce,
mm-hmm.
and there was no wage laws. There was no labor protections for these people. The only thing was slavery was gone. And guess what? All they knew how to do was
sharecropping.
They knew how to deal in the fields.
Right.
So now you wound up giving them a little bit of wage. I'm not gonna say they weren't whipped. It was illegal for those type of things to happen, but you damn know well that stuff was still happening.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the rights that go with it to protect that abolition, that stuff didn't come till much later. Obviously, when you see the civil rights movement and everything like that, with the segregation.
If you can have a billionaire NBA basketball owner push an opposing player on the sidelines of an NBA Finals game,
right, that's right. I saw that.
Then you know that stuff was happening back then still.
Right.
You know what's happening.
Well, what about the comment from the owner of the what was the team? The Magic? The old man that with the racial comments he made?
Sterling.
Oh, yeah. Bro, so, and that whole thing was, okay, so now we give you a wage, but now you got to give it right back to us anyways, because now you got to buy your own food, your own
right.
clothing.
Right, and this was the MO they did, and they did this. We discovered that this was the same pattern they followed in Puerto Rico as well, because when we were down there, they were telling us, we actually went and visited a plantation in Puerto Rico. Yes, there was plantations in Puerto Rico.
That's right.
And we visited a plantation in Puerto Rico, and he was showing us the homes that basically were passed down from the former slaves, and like families of former slave descendants lived there to this day. You know, one of the things we didn't get to do, I'd be curious to maybe try to do when we go back, like, you know, just as a documentary thing, is maybe see if any of them are willing to talk to us, like in their homes, if they have any knowledge of, you know.
Someone's listening right now, right, going, no, there was no plantations, as they're shaking their Domino sugar packet. No,
right,
no,
hey, exactly. There was
no, 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 the story behind that.
Stirring the sugar into their coffee
right.
or tea, not knowing the key pivotal role that Puerto Rico played in that. But essentially what it means is that, so you had sharecropping, and then, you know, basically it's the same thing like the end of poverty where, okay, these guys have the skill to work the land and stuff, but they can't own it. They can't refine this stuff. Mm-hmm. So they had to go and pay the cotton gin. They got to gin the cotton. They had to only buy within certain, not towns, but rather like certain communities and things like that. And it was all set up. There's many ways to oppress somebody other than outright what you would know as conventional slavery.
Right.
All
right.
And you see it manifested today if you bring it all the way up to today. But I want to focus on what was going on here. And you got to stop being so one track and take your mind of it. Because the thing that vexes me the most as I read this, and again, it's very, very short article, is this mindset that I see, and it's mostly perpetrated by Esau, but you do, I mean, it's like I said, it's even more egregious when you see it coming from, you know, the kind of the wannabes of our people, the Uncle Toms of our people,
mm-hmm.
that you know, or talk about this stuff. That was then. What does it matter now?
Yep.
When we know that the effects of slavery are far reaching till this day. And if you think about it, abolition was what,
1863.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
The Emancipation Proclamation, but
right.
it was still rolling a few
right,
years after.
Right, so think about it. So let's just say, to get momentum going, 1880s, right?
Right.
All
right,
right. Before stuff
right.
was real.
That's about right.
About 1880s, yeah. right? I mean, you know, 100 years may seem like a lot to us, but when you think about that, right? I mean, you're talking about 100-some-odd years, and we have not distanced ourselves from the effects of those things, especially when the playing field was uneven well into the 1960s. And then when it was evened out, based on this article, you'll understand there's really no way that we will ever be able to come up. And what they do is occasionally to perpetrate the illusion of inclusion, they'll let somebody become a little bit into the upper echelons,
right?
Right, and it's not even really the upper; it's what we would perceive as the upper, right? Like, because if I'm down here in the basement and I get to move to the first floor, I'm on the come up, right?
Right, right.
Not knowing that there's 30 more levels above where things is just like you can't even imagine what's
what?
Up there, right?
There's a penthouse?
Right.
What?
Right. You're eating crackers and now you're
right,
eating cheese
right,
and crackers.
Right, right. Hey, I know. I
was going to say that.
I was going to say that, but I was trying to do a different one because I use that one a lot, right?
No,
right.
But hey, if it ain't broke,
yeah,
don't fix
right.
it.
Right. So all you had was crackers and now you could put cheese on those crackers. You think you arrived. You think your stuff don't smell. Now imagine you could throw a little piece of meat on it too. You know what I'm saying?
Or
the little
spray cheese.
The little spray cheese, the processed cheese.
Repentance
that thing
is
crack,
to come up.
But by and large, the way that our people are able to gain any type of wealth is what? Shucking and cooning, right? And so it's like sports is the big one, right? A lot of our people are able to amass more for sports.
Yep.
Music, right? Entertaining, okay? Sometimes actors. But that small change compared to this generational wealth that you see here, right? So it says, yet in the case of Southern slaveholders who lost much of their wealth after the abolition of slavery in America and General William Sherman's scorched earth march to the sea, those millionaires who were indeed temporarily embarrassed seemed to recover quite quickly. That is the surprising result of a meticulous study, not some
right.
half-ass, half-handed study.
They accomplished a diligence.
It was a meticulous study.
Okay.
Of historical census data by three economists, Philip Ager, Leah Bustan, and Catherine Erickson. Before the Civil War, the South was deeply unequal. Among white households, those at the 90th percentile of the wealth distribution owned 14 times as much as those at the median. So that to put that in perspective, that means if the median was 100 grand,
right.
like these guys were 14 times beyond that. So you're talking 1.4 million. All right. So that's, you know, that's the disparity that you have there. This is by contrast, in today's seemingly inegalitarian times, the ratio among white households is just 9.5 to 1. Roughly 50% of the wealth in the antebellum South was held in slaves. So now he says seemingly, and again, he's using some words here, right? So I'm going to put up these definitions, all right? I'll make sure that I get the definitions for everybody, all right? Let's get the definitions.
Doug, you looking up seemingly? hey, you know,
characterized by or promoting inequality between people, all right? So seemingly, those types. He said the ratio among white households is just 9.5 to 1, but it is still far, you know, it's not 14 times, but it's 9.5 to 1. So meaning much hasn't changed.
Bro, that's not a much of a change at all.
No.
And that was from the studies from the 1860s,
yes,
you said?
Yes.
Oh, my
yes.
goodness.
So, you know, people like to talk about, oh, but look, you guys are everywhere. You blacks and Hispanics and this and that and whatever. Yeah, doing what we've always done is
right.
is supporting and uplifting your lifestyles and your stuff, right? Because you guys aren't the ones doing these type of things. And the other thing that's important to note in here is that, yeah, there are some white people that are not wealthy, right? Like, that's a misnomer. You can't say that all, right? Those are the two-time losers. So, you know, this is your kingdom, and if you can't excel in your own kingdom, you done messed up. Why are you slumming it down here with me? Go live your, you know what I'm saying? Stop trying to be like us.
Right.
So it says, understand that 50% of the wealth in the antebellum South was held in slaves, meaning the actual slaves, all right? This goes back to what I was saying in the beginning. Do not discount the fact of the massive land, the crop yields, everything else that was owned, the equipment, all that stuff, right? So it says, after the surrender of the Confederacy in 1865, all this disappeared. Wealth for the top 1% dropped by 76% between the censuses of 1860 and 1870. This had the effect of reducing inequality, but only temporarily. By the next census in 1880, the sons of slaveholders had recovered the wealth standings of their fathers compared with those who grew up in non-slaveholding households. So it says they recovered it. That means initially there was a drop-off till they figured out how we're going to – and this is where you got Jim Crow, Black
right.
Code, segregation, sharecropping. And they said, hey, we're going to come together and we're going to figure out a way because we still have the land. We still have this.
Mm-hmm.
All we've lost was – the free labor that we had.
Sounds like the Renaissance.
Right. So, and that's exactly, and if you think about it, that's a perfect term for it. There was a little bit of a Renaissance between 1865 and 1880. So in a matter of 15 years, they recovered all it said it was a 76% drop. They got it all back in 15 years.
Yeah, because they stick together.
Hold on, check it out. And by 1990, they had surpassed those that were in non-slavery. So basically, 15 years, 1900. So 15 years it took them to get it back. Another 20, and they were already skyrocketing past it. And you were in the 1900s already. All right. So it says, after ruling out other possible explanations, such as greater skills or business acumen, right? Because everybody got a. But I like this article because it was addressing the objections
right
before people could possibly bring them out. The economists interpret this recovery as the result of elite networks acting as an invisible safety net. This is the nephews, yeah, everybody yep else come all together. Mm-hmm. And he says that basically they looked out for each other. They looked out for each other. And they created elite networks as an invisible safety net from this stuff. And they were all on one accord, and they said, this is what we're going to do.
Dang.
We may not have the slave labor, but we own all the plantations. Mm. We own all the equipment. We have the market cornered on these resources. So we need to figure out a way to get around this new
you know,
America.
You know what else is? And we're white.
And we're white. Right. Yeah,
hold
because,
on,
because
on.
Big, remember, they've always had this manifest destiny in their mind till this day. This is how you can have a white Jesus. This is how it could be so offensive right for us to continue to, you know, mm-hmm, never forget the Holocaust and 9/11, but forget about slavery and everything else.
Right.
When you could see the far-reaching repercussions of it here, right? So,
right.
So it says the sons of slaveholders married into wealthy families and obtained well-compensated white-collar work, reversing even large declines in fortunes. So it was like, hey, you know what? All right, yeah, you know, you're like my third cousin of this. You're my nephew from here. I'm going to give you a job that I would give, you know, somebody who's not connected, but I'm going to pay you $100 or $150,000
mm-hmm
a year for it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, we'll call you the supervisor of custodial services. And
right,
and you see stuff like that today, till this day. It happens in politics.
Yep.
How do you think these people get placed in different positions?
Dude,
that's the elite network.
Lobbyists.
Right.
When you're a lobbyist, bro, you can do all right, man.
He said, bro,
you do all right.
That's absolutely true.
Right. So it says the sons of – okay, we said it. A long line of economists from John Maynard Keynes to Thomas Piketty have noted that wealth begets wealth.
Mm.
Right, so this is what I was saying earlier. Wealth begets wealth, meaning you cannot obtain true wealth if you didn't come from the wealth.
Right.
That's that old money, right? They talk about old money and new money. That's that old money. It says, but an opposite dynamic has been observed in studies of black Americans more than 100 years after the end of slavery. So when it comes to Esau, when it comes to white people, right, wealth begets wealth, and you're able to kind of, you know, keep your thing going. It says a study of all Americans born between 1978 and 1983 by the economists Roz Chetty, Nathaniel Hendren, and Maggie Jones, oh, and Sonia Porter, found that even the black sons of wealthy parents exhibited extraordinary downward mobility relative to whites.
Mm. Right.
So even if you have what's deemed as wealthy black parents, right, and you know what you deem as so-called Hispanics or Latinos, we're largely underreported in these things, and it's not, and it's by design that it's like that. So it would probably be even worse if you had those numbers in there. It says that they are not able to keep that. Basically, there's no generational wealth when it comes to Jake,
right,
when it comes to blacks, Hispanics,
right? Because all you really have to pass on is just the money,
right.
That's it.
You don't have the elite networks.
Exactly.
You don't have the connections and everything else, right? You just have the currency. You just have the money.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing else there to pilfer you up.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Even then, they try to find a way to destroy those black families, like for the Cosbys. The
right.
Cosbys is wealthy. But guess what happened? They took everything from Bill Cosby. Yes, Jay-Z's a billionaire now, but you never know what's going to happen in the future. They'd be like, oh, he raped this person, raped that person.
Dude, but that's few and far.
Right.
When well, and no, but the point is, it says that won't carry on.
Yeah, exactly.
His seed will not maintain that wealth.
Exactly.
When it comes to our people, it doesn't work out in our favor that way.
Blue Ivy will be good, but after that,
That's it. So that's the point. That's the point. What they're saying here. This is what they've discovered, right? And this is more than 100 years after the end of slavery. So going back to what I said earlier about how it wasn't that far, it may seem like a large number to us, the impacts of that are still here and relevant today, right? So it says they also had much higher rates of incarceration. Unlike white slaveholders after the Civil War, intergenerational transmission of black wealth one century later seems much more fragile. much more fragile. So the point in this is that they were able to recover quickly. This is, and this is hard data by economists. They observe different data to see this. And it, the same is not true. So this there is a double standard is the point. There is no equality in this equation when it comes to that stuff with our people.
Right.
Right.
So, you know, to me, that was real interesting as far as how that brought out. And I think it's a good point. I think it's good stuff to kind of latch on to if you are ever engaged, and it's worthwhile to kind of edify somebody because you might have a scoffer that comes and says something
that's
like
that. That's an excellent point about how with the whole equality piece, because there's no such thing as equality in any kingdom. Because the kingdom has the same characteristics. There's a ruling class and a serving class. So our people are striving ignorantly to become equal with someone that was set up by God to be over them.
Right.
Bro, like, that's an excellent article right there.
Yep.
It's short, but it has a lot of information.
And I like what you say there about the kingdom thing, because I've brought that out. I remember I have mentioned a couple times I had to testify on a congregant's behalf for some issues that they were having, you know, over custody with their children. And the issue at hand, although it seems to be lost in the courts, is the well-being of the child. And,
right.
and what they're trying to prove is that by following the Bible the way it's supposed to be, right? They say the way we teach it, but the way it's supposed to be, that the child is in danger, like the child's well-being is in danger. Meanwhile, like, you know, the father was abusive and, you know, so physically harming. And even like the whole process is probably more harming than what's going on. But the point that I make is we were talking about that, and they were talking about, because, you know, I was saying, yeah, hey, all people have a place in the kingdom, right? All nations do. Even Esau for a time, for a dispensation of time, will have a place there. You know, and then when they try to back you in, I'm like, what's a kingdom? Which means it's a monarchy. And which was a monarchy, that means there's classes.
That's right.
And we have a class system today. So how is whatever we're teaching any different? I said, the only difference is we actually put hard names to who these people are in these classes.
Right.
Where you guys try to glaze over it to I'm telling you, we're in a time now where it's like you really can't say anything. It's like people are so offended. Like, it's ridiculous.
Right.
Like, it's outrageous. Like, somebody wanted to do a straight pride parade and, like, everybody's getting on them. Like, you know, I'm like, listen, I mean, I still just can't get over, like, where you want to stick your rod or what you want to do is like a national issue. And you're seen as, like, you know, bigoted if you're against that stuff. I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't want to go left and make it about that, because after I let you guys come, and I'm going to transition to this other article.
Give me Matthew 6, 9, and 10. Because what happens is that one of the reasons why a lot of people, well, you tell them about the kingdom and everything, they look at this as pictures portray. We're all going to be in the air on clouds.
Right.
Yep.
We're going to have angels, and it's going to just be music, and we're going to be eating good chocolate and fruits, you know, and we're not going to be doing anything. Every day we're just going to wake up on a cloud, just doing nothing. Right. You know, I mean, this is the picture. I mean, I'm being facetious, but it's realistic. They don't realize that the new kingdom, when Christ returns, is going to be on the same planet that we're habitating now. And I'm going to prove that right here. You got to understand, it's just going to be flipped, because when you read Isaiah, right? What is it? 28. Not 29. Surely you're turning things upside down. Things have been turned upside down.
Mm-hmm.
We're not the ruling class like we were always supposed to be anymore. Okay, but I need to bring this out in these scriptures here, because many of us, especially the so-called Hispanics, have said this prayer since we were kids. We know it to this day and night, front and back and front. And we just regurgitate it, right? Because we're not even asking any questions about it. It wasn't until I came into this truth, because remember, I was raised Catholic, okay, that I realized, like, damn, this is a heavy prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead. I just want 9 and 10.
The book of St. Matthew, chapter 6, verse 9. After this manner, therefore, pray ye, our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Does that sound familiar to you listeners online, right? Our Father who art in heaven. It's called the Lord's Prayer. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Thy kingdom come.
Thy kingdom come.
Thy will be done.
Thy will be done. His will is going to be done. Everything from the beginning to the end. Go ahead.
In earth.
Where?
In earth.
No, in clouds.
In earth.
In heavens.
In earth.
In earth.
as it is in heaven.
As it is in heaven, meaning it's going to be blissful.
That sounds like treason.
Right. Oh, forget
right.
it.
Right.
No, and then the reason that I'm saying it, right, mm-hmm. because like that means, right, because you got people who purport to be Christian, but then they're also like on this whole
hypocritical.
You know, you got far left, far right, whatever about the country and everything. And it's like, this is why Paul at one point in the scripture says, hey, people who say these things, they declare plainly that they seek a country.
Hey, and when this comes to pass, there won't be no summit of the world leaders coming together and Trump pushing
right.
Christ out the way.
Right.
That's not going to be happening.
Yeah,
they
right. be like that. Yeah.
Trump's like, hold on, nigga. This is me. This
nope.
is me.
I'm gonna tax whatever you're bringing in from the heavens.
Right.
Hey, so the bottom line is that when Christ returns, the Black Messiah. Okay. Yes, America is gonna be destroyed according to the Bible. Sure. Okay. Certain parts of the islands are gonna be destroyed. Sure. Okay. But he's gonna restore everything the way it was always supposed to be, with the Blacks, Hispanic, Native Americans, who are the Israelites, 12 tribes of Israel, 144,000 men according to Revelation 7, mm-hmm. ruling everything. And like Captain brought out, the heathen, the other nations, will be there as well, playing certain roles.
That's right.
It's very simple. It's not hate. See, that's not hate. That's prophecy. That's the gospel.
You're right. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm going to go ahead and read this next article. All right. I'll probably start with... I'll start with the root version. It says, Dallas High School cuts off valedictorian's mic after she mentions Trayvon Martin and Tamir Rice in a graduation speech. The other headline says, a valedictorian wanted to recognize Black victims of violence during her speech, but says her school turned her mic off mid-tribute.
Man, this is a valedictorian. That's like her time. When you're a valedictorian, that's your time to shine. Yeah, you say your thing, bro.
And you know it was BS too, right? Because she stands there for a second and then does this. She taps it. And then when she walks away, he came up and tapped it, and it worked.
Yeah, yeah. So
the devil, bro, I'm telling you.
So man. It says, Principal Temeskin Asmaram, and I don't know if he's Somali or whatever, or described it as a technical difficulty to the students, staff, and family members who had gathered together for the Emmett J. Conrad High School graduation in Dallas last Saturday. But a video, which has now gone viral, appears to tell another story. Just as the valedictorian Ruha Hagar, she's Ishmael, I believe, mentions Trayvon Martin, Tamir Rice, and all the other children who became victims of injustice in her speech. So she had started off and she was like, this is for, mm-hmm. you know, all the victims of violence and Trayvon Martin and Tamir. And as soon as he heard Trayvon Martin, he was like down looking at the program and his head pops up and he goes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his
mm-hmm.
signal to like cut the feed. And he says, Asmaram, which is the principal, gestures towards his throat and gives a thumbs up to someone in the audience. Hagar's mic then goes silent. So it wasn't in the audience. When you know how these setups are, the sound booth's in the back. So
right.
he looked across to whoever was dealing with the sound, and they told him that. My valedictorian speech was cut short because I said the names of Black children who had become victims of police brutality. Hagar wrote in her caption of the video calling the silenced mic pathetic. The 19-year-old top student had intended to include their names in earlier drafts of the speech and said she got pushback early on. So what you were saying
so
earlier,
knew,
right.
Knew,
right. In a statement she posted on Twitter, Hagar said a teacher told her mentioning Trayvon and Tamir's names will incite anger towards white people, a group which, according to him, experienced high levels of discrimination in America.
What?
What? Yeah, bro, that's what it says. So this is what one of the teachers told her, that white people experience a lot of discrimination.
Hey, that was high school graduation?
This is a high school graduation.
I got a problem with her being 19 and graduating.
Bro, I was going to say the same. I was going to say the exact
and she
same thing.
Damn right she's going to be valedictorian.
I was going to say the exact same thing.
He probably got
thing.
Kids and everything, but she learned about life, bro.
I was thinking the exact. I was like, hold on. I graduated when I was 17. Hold on. What's this? I thought the exact
yeah,
same
that's
thing.
That's
bro.
A sophomore year in college, bro.
Well, I think she... She escaped one of those countries. I think I read it. I don't know if it's in this one. Maybe in the next one if I have time to read it. She escaped one of those countries where, like, you know, she was, like, being subjugated. So I think she got a late start.
No, but they're smart in them countries, boy.
Yeah,
they're freaking super. They're more educated than us here in
I
America,
know,
man.
But we don't have to deal with that stuff. It's like we got the sister here that came from Liberia. She was like, yo, I had my babies in my back running through the jungle.
Right.
Like, gunshots firing and stuff. So, I mean, you can't even imagine that stuff, bro. It sounds like a video game. You know what I'm saying? Like, How do you live through something like that? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just crazy.
That was just a side note, man.
So I did see that too. I was like, 19. What the hell is this?
You should have a house by now.
That's why she's the valedictorian. She had like some extra years to get it right. So anyway, it says the 19-year-old top student had intended to include their names in earlier drafts of the speech, and she got pushback. Right. So the teacher deemed their inclusion too political, Hagar said, noting that he didn't have a similar concern about her mentions of school shootings and religious persecution. Hagar said she met with Asmaram, who's the principal now, about the speech prior to delivering it. He also advised her to strike the names, saying they were against. So she had the teacher and the principal told her, don't mention the names. But the principal said they were against Dallas Independent School District's valedictorian speech guidelines. Later, Asmaram suggested amending the line so it read to all the children who became victims of injustice. Hagar said it would cover more children. So he wanted to say, don't say just them, say all.
Because it's power in words. It loses its power.
Right. But here's the thing, and if you see, and there's a couple of things at play here. Here's what's subtle. He says it was against the school district's policy to do that. But then she could still do it, just don't mention them by name.
Right.
So the policy says then you can mention those things, but just not by name. So you see what's going on here. So he says, when I asked him why, he said it would be sending the wrong message to the graduating students. That message being, you will get shot if you are black in America.
Pretty much.
In an interview with the Washington Post, Hagar says she didn't think Asmaram had a problem with her speech. In a conversation with Asmaram the day before the graduation ceremony, Hagar says he told her speaking out about Trayvon and Tamir's deaths wouldn't change anything until she was in a position of power. His intentions were not rooted in hate. No, they're probably rooted in fear. Mm-hmm. But him saying that his job, how could you let this speech go on? You know what I'm saying? Tenure when you're a teacher all that stuff. So, but him saying that me mentioning those names won't make a difference is something I disagreed with. The University of Texas bound graduate told the Post. I told him how some of us won't ever have a position of power. So to just sit there and wait is the wrong mindset to have. Trayvon Martin died at the hands of an armed vigilante, George Zimmerman, in 2012 in Florida. He was just 17 years old. Tamir Rice, a 12-year-old boy from Ohio, was shot and killed by a police officer while he was playing with a toy gun in 2014.
That's the worst one, bro.
Yeah.
Dallas ISD said it is investigating the incident. That's the independent school district. Asmaram has yet to speak publicly about the speech. Of course, the grand irony here for Asmaram and Dallas ISD is that by cutting off Hagar's mic, they gifted her a much bigger platform.
Yep. Well, what was meant for good? What was meant for evil was really meant for good, right?
If it was a technical issue, right? He could just say, "Hey, come back up and finish your speech. It's working now."
Oh, he was no way in the world he was going to do that.
Bro, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's all BS, man.
You're right. But the article's right at the end. It does bring more light to it. You know what? That's good.
All right. So I want to read the second article because it has some similarities but some different stuff. It's the same thing. And it says so the highlights are: Texas valedictorian says that her school cut off her microphone during her graduation speech. When she began to speak about the black victims of police brutality, Ruha Hagar, 19, said on Twitter that her speech was preemptively ended when she mentioned Tamir Rice and Trayvon Martin. A clip of the moment has gone viral. Hagar explained that in an earlier meeting with her school's principal, she was told not to mention victims of police brutality in her speech because doing so would not fall within the Dallas Independent School District valedictorian speech guidelines. But on Saturday, she chose to read her original speech. Now, let me tell you something about the whole police brutality thing, right? We are for the powers that be. We are for the authorities.
That's right.
Right?
100%.
But we are also for fairness and justice according to what the scriptures say. Right? And what I noted very interestingly is that whenever one of these Edomite cops are on trial or something going on, I see a lot of posts on Facebook, people that I'm acquainted with somehow on there as well. I wouldn't say friends because Facebook's not really – a bunch of your friends. It's just a bunch of people on the internet that maybe you once knew or whatever. You share something similar and you have it on there. And I see a lot of defense of the cops and I see a lot of commentary of the cops. And it brings me to that other thing that I wanted to mention briefly.
Mm-hmm.
You had another cop recently who was black by all accounts, right? I think he's Somali or whatever. Okay. But basically non-white. Okay. Mm-hmm. Whether or not he was Jake, who knows, but he recently got convicted for an unqualified shooting, and he got the maximum. He got 12 years on it, right? Like a manslaughter and something else. And I don't see anybody coming to his defense saying this is wrong. I haven't seen any GoFundMes for his defense fund. Wasn't there another one that was a real prick racist that he wound up getting, like, people open up GoFundMes for him or whatever?
Yeah, the one that killed Michael Brown.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one that killed Michael Brown. Yeah, he's set. He's good. He was like, all right.
Man, they raised a lot of money for that. Yeah. A lot. Quick, yeah. Too, yep. Man.
Yeah.
Out the gate.
It sounds like those elite networks that we're reading about with the slaveholders.
That's exactly what it is.
That,
yep.
That's able to prevent these guys from really falling.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So I just found it interesting that people are so seemingly quiet about this. And you know, whenever it's something else, it's like, listen, am I saying every shooting's not warranted? I mean, Parm and I were talking about it before we went on the air. Like, it's a tough choice to make, right? I mean,
really, yeah,
you know, I mean,
sure.
In some circumstances, but I mean, there was no footage on this one, nothing, you know, and it was just like kind of testimony, and you know, it was just quick to convict them. So I don't want to go too left with that because, you know, we only got like 10 minutes, a little less than 10 minutes left on the show. But I bring that out because, you know, this is what they were really concerned about, because there's this thing in, and I believe first responders do deserve a lot of credit, right? If my house was on fire, I want you in the best position mentally, physically, whatever, to arrive on time and, you know, save us. You know what I'm saying? If I need the cops because of something, you know, I'm with you, right? And
right.
And the scripture tells you, like, they're not a terror to good works. They're terrorists or whatever. But that's just not the case in every situation, right? Trayvon Martin, I mean, you know, that was the vigilante piece, but that didn't go down right. That thing was terrible.
Tamir Rice was the worst one.
Tamir Rice was terrible. You know, Michael Brown was questionable, but I mean, you know, around that time with Michael Brown, we also had the sister here that her son,
right.
You know, I mean.
Oh, that's right.
And
right.
You know, it's crazy. I think I saw one recently. It didn't get a lot of media attention, but it's like kind of going viral on the internet. There was a dude with like a chain, and he kept walking towards the cop. And this cop waited a long time, man, before he popped off on him, man. And he tried to taser first, and he missed him.
Went through levels of force. Which is fine.
And he must have backpedaled for like a half mile.
Damn.
Yeah.
You know what?
I if anything, I think he waited too long.
That's clean.
Yeah. So you know what I'm saying? Like, I want to say that to mention that you could go on record and say, because the assumption is that we're just going to defend anybody, even if they're a criminal. You know what I'm saying? And
no, that couldn't be further from the truth because that they're going contrary to the scriptures. So
right,
we're going to defend
right,
the scriptures.
Right. So it's obviously a sensitive thing and a touchy subject. But I mean, some things are just real clear. Like, we're talking about the Eric Garner thing, and that whole thing wasn't. You know what I'm saying? And
right.
These guys got off, and you had straight footage of the dude basically killing him on camera.
I was surprised they got off. I really was.
You know, so anyway, so it says the Texas valedictorian said that her school cut off her microphone during her speech. An Embassy 5 reporter, she is passionate about social justice and activism. But when she first met with school's principal, Temeskin Asmaram, to go over the draft, so they review it. He went over the draft.
Yeah.
He told her, mentions of police brutality were too political and did not fall within the Dallas Independent School District valedictorian speech guidelines. Hagar said she did not have access to those guidelines. So these are little details that weren't in the other article. So he just told her this. He never showed her that was the case.
Dang.
It's kind of like when cops come up and they tell you, oh, no, you got to disperse. But if you give them a little resistance on
right.
something, oh, okay. All right. Like, wait, we saw the incident today, like posted on the group where that kind of came up.
The article said, Hagar, 33, homeowner, and a mother of four.
Oh, gosh, so she's 19. You're terrible.
Bro, it's funny because he said it, and I was thinking the entire time. I'm sorry.
So when her graduation day came on Saturday, Hagar chose to read her original speech, not the censored version, as she called it, which means he was prepared. Mm-hmm. He had premeditated this.
Yep.
He said, hey, I'm going to give you a signal just in case.
Oh, he kept looking
at her. Yeah, he was like, I got a feeling that she may try to give her original speech, and if that's the case,
her name is Hagar. She might be rebellious as hell.
Right.
She's a grown woman, so.
Yeah.
She shared a video of the moment on Twitter in a clip that has since gone viral. She says, to the kids who were murdered in the senseless mass school shootings, she says at the video start, to Trayvon Martin, to Tamir Rice, and all the other children who became victims of injustice, and that's when her microphone cuts out. In the video, Asmaram, the principal, appears to signal a thumbs up to someone off camera just before the sound was cut off. According to the Washington Post, Asmaram said the incident was a technical difficulty. If you guys look this up, you'll see the video, and it's not a technical difficulty. It's so evident. It's like the thing with Trump and Pence and the waters and all that stuff. It's like so obvious. But Hagar, who immigrated from Iran when she was 12 to flee religious persecution for her family's Baha'i's faith, thinks her speech was curtailed on purpose. I do too. I never expected to be silenced. The consequences I was expecting to face was them holding my diploma or having a conversation with my principal. So she thought that she would just say her speech, and she knew that if there was something against the policy, she might have some repercussions. Hagar told NBC5, I never expected them to not allow me to finish, because at the end of the day, schools want to raise socially conscious students, students who are able to think for themselves. That's what I was doing. She told the Washington Post that she was surprised. I was like, wow, they really did this. They really went there. And that, her face, like, shows that, too. So it's like, I know. She's like, wow, really? The Dallas ISD told NBC5 that it is looking into the incident. In Dallas ISD, we educate leaders of tomorrow and encourage student voices. Mm-hmm. And we are looking into this matter.
As long as you don't mention the names of two black young men.
Yep. And it says the teen is using her platform to share what the full portion of her speech would have looked like and to elevate activist voices. So she wrote, like, her full speech here.
He said, look, okay, listen, if you're going to mention these names, be sure to remind the crowd to never forget the Holocaust.
Hey, she got halfway through. So they let her say the first part, and then as soon as she said that, you know, it says that the rest of what she said after that, she was going to say to the kids across the globe affected by war, famine, persecution, and child labor who have lost years of education due to hunger, displacement, lack of finances, and lack of educational resources. So there's your answer as to why she's 19, all right? Yep. Freaking haters. All right? She says, I'm sorry. You see, tonight is a celebration of our achievements, yes, but it's also a reminder of all the work that needs to be done. And as much as I hate to say this, class of 2019, we just might be the future. So no matter which path you take in life or where you end up in the next decade, remember, you have an obligation to your community and the world at large.
And she was born in 2000.
I was going to say, she was born when I, oh my God, never mind. We're good. Yeah, your speech sounds good, but I'm not seeing anything about 9/11 here. I think we should mention that as well.
Ridiculous, yeah, man.
So it says she's not the only student to have this experience. Last year, Lulabelle Seitz, a high school valedictorian in California, said that her graduation speech was cut short when she attempted to address her alleged sexual assault.
Mm.
You got something you want to bring up? I see you like shifting over there. You're doing like the pee-pee dance, bro. Bring it out.
He's doing the ABO.
He's doing the ABO. Used to be you just saw the fingers in front of the camera.
That's all it was, bro.
Hilarious. Just her speech kind of reminded me of a scripture that, you know,
Get out.
Zechariah 11, verse 4 and 5. Because, you know, what she's saying, like, you know, well, she's right. Like, she's right. Like, people are... These police and a lot of these people are getting they are getting away with these murders and not being guilty. But the thing is, it's written in the Bible.
You're right. There you go. Bring it out.
Book of Zechariah, chapter 11, verse 4. Thus saith the Lord my God, feed the flock of the slaughter.
Feed the flock of the dead. Go ahead.
Verse 5. Whose possessors slay them.
Whose possessors slay them. You could talk about slave masters, but in this instance, we're going to talk about the police. They're going to be our possessors. Go ahead.
And hold themselves not guilty.
These police kill us and hold themselves not guilty. They kill us and their government hold them not guilty. Go ahead.
And they that sell them say, blessed be the Lord, for I am rich.
The ones that do these things, they turn around, thank God I'm free. Thank God I got away with this murder. Thank God I got away for killing this 12-year-old boy, Tamir Rice. Now I'm going to go ahead and live with my family with the GoFundMe money that I got, that everybody raised for me, and I'm going to live off that money even though I'm suspended from my job with pay. You know what I mean? But,
and their own shepherds pity them not.
And their own shepherds pity them not. It's talking about these... Black Lives Matter. Yeah, they bring them up for a little bit, and then after a while, we fade away. I haven't heard anything from Black Lives Matter for the past year.
Yeah, but we also know that was a Soros funded group. It's all political. You know, he has his views,
propaganda.
And yeah, you know, propaganda. And
no, like when it says, and their own shepherds pay them not. Like the perfect example would be when like Michael Brown got killed, and you had Jesse Jackson show up to try and get money, mm-hmm. like versus being there on like in a sincere way. And then
right.
That's why that dude told him. He said, "Jesse, what are you doing here, Jesse? Brother? Matter of fact, you ain't a brother. You a nigga. I was like, damn.
Yeah, they told him to go. They said, we don't want you here.
Yeah, to the face. He said, yeah, I just came from the Brown family. Yeah. No, you weren't, because we were there, Jesse.
Because all these years, and what has Jesse done? You know, and he could give his technical resume and all that stuff like
the
that.
Only
but, I mean, what change has come about?
The only
really
thing that he's done was he changed the so-called Negroes from being Negroes into African-Americans. Hey,
which the mule is like, no, I'm
right.
black. Exactly. Oh, no, I'm African. Okay.
Hey, and that's not to say that he didn't have good intentions coming up as a young
man. Right, right.
Okay.
Right.
Guess
just
what?
You just get
polluted. When they shot Martin Luther King, his best friend, that was a message to all so-called blacks.
Yeah, that took
blacks.
His courage,
right.
man. That took
okay.
his courage.
And they were
right
like, we'll
that.
Keep you in the political loop, but guess what? We'll even let you run for president at some point. But don't expect it to come through.
Hey, but you know what's crazy about that? It's not even just that's what he got directly. It didn't happen too far apart between him and Malcolm.
That's right.
So the message was out there. It was like, hey, we're going to do this, and we're going to hold ourselves not guilty mm-hmm. because you know what I'm saying? And, you know, whether it's going to be via Patsy or whatever it is, you know what I'm saying? Like, we're going to take you out when you get to that point. Like, we'll only let you go but so far. And, you know, these guys want warning over that. That's why a lot of them are trying to be, you know, we got to use wisdom. So I do recognize that.
Right.
But don't come there and try to make money off of the
that's right.
off of the damn thing.
That's
you know
right.
what I'm
saying? Man, that's all it is. That's their whole objective.
Right. Anyway, that's the show for today. That was the Power Hour, the Lost 144K. We will probably be broadcasting from where we're traveling to next week. So we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, Lord's Will be on the air next Sabbath. And with that, we say shalom.
Shalom.
Shalom.